episode 72.
Here it is.
This is Anna.
And Shireen.
So that thing let me go.
And today we are talking about, we're going to be doing some catch up and talking shit about Lena Dunham and also the phrase incredibly hot, or extremely hot rather. And then you talk about...
I talk about a women's commune in Syria.
And I talk about Bohemian Rhapsody and Freddie Mercury. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
72. What a zoo. It's time. I was going to continue rhyming.
How dare you call us zoo people?
That's just it's been a crazy time. It's been a crazy time.
Where is my document with the files I put on it for this episode?
We're professionals. We're prepared.
Found it. I found it.
Okay, we found it. We're good to go. We're still rolling. Keep all this in.
Yes.
Yes. You were in Chicago last week. Or weekend. Was it fun?
Shout out to all the people I met.
Yeah, you were texting me such nice things people were telling you.
Yes. Holy shit. How do I not remember anyone's names? I'm
Kennedy
so sorry.
Smith.
Kennedy. Yes. Oh, no. Well, Kennedy, I remember. How could I forget Kennedy? Kennedy, thank you so much for hanging out with me.
Your tweet really, like, was so sweet.
Tweet and email.
And email, I think... The fact that we can have an impact on someone we've never met is so wild.
I'm always surprised when anyone has any interest in anything I do.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Hannah and Jesse, thank you so much for hanging out with us at the Moxie afterward and buying us drinks. And Hannah, thank you for buying me taquitos.
Wow. That is a... fans are great.
Again, Kennedy, thanks for hanging out with us and thanks for accepting John Gabris's drinks. John Gabris would not stop buying everyone drinks.
Wow. Dude, I wish I was there. That sounds so fun. It's so nice when Anna was texting me being like, someone came up to me and they told me about the show. Just like, it's just weird. Every time someone comes up to me and they're like, I know your show. I'm like, no, you don't.
It's really trippy. There was one guy who said, I'm sorry I didn't catch your name, but you're wearing a beanie and you had a beard. Maybe I did catch your name and I completely forgot and I apologize. You said how our info about Saudi Arabia blew your mind or opened your mind or something. So thank you for listening.
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Damn, what is your name? You're part of the Zeit Gang, so I'm sure if you're listening, you know who you are. Who else? Priyanka Das, thanks for the shout out. Nice. You tweeted that you were too starstruck to take a photo of me. I was
that's
like,
so
in
cute.
What world is anyone starstruck of me?
And someone was like, FYI, Anna's really hot.
That is, okay, I'm sorry, but what do people see when they see me? Am I like Shallow Hal thing where I'm like, I'm a creature of the night?
No.
Then everyone sees me and I'm like a model.
That's literally, people that's only listen to our voices. So it's like really strange, I think, when they see us in person.
The definition of extremely hot doesn't feel real to me. Like, that's not like a thing where I'm like, well, you know, as a beautiful person. Like, never in my life have I considered myself anything.
Just take the compliment.
I just exist.
It's like that one time. It's like that one time I was, I guess, in on The Single, Allison Stevenson and Alexander Twins Tweetins podcast. And I got a message from someone being like, hey, because I was very honest and very awkward on that, like, admitting to being very awkward on that show. And then I got a message from someone being like, hey, I listened to you on The Single and was so curious what you looked like. Didn't expect you to be good looking. Like, oh, it's word.
But everyone's always trying to date you.
No, I'm just saying, like...
Shireen has so many male suitors who are like,
that's not true.
Shireen, love me! And Shireen's like, why are all these dudes obsessed with me?
I think my point
think
with that
I
story...
I date women. That's one of my favorite ones. Some guy was like, should I ask Shireen out? I was like, I don't know. Shireen's kind of... Because I remember literally a week before, you were like, yeah, I don't want to date that guy. And I was like,
just tell them I'm dating
her
right now.
Yeah, ask her out.
No,
I didn't actually. After all that, I said, yes, you should ask her out. Do a whole display.
Yeah.
See how it goes.
Yeah, flowers, chocolates.
I'm not that evil.
Don't give me flowers. I'll kill them. But the reason why I brought that up
everything
is because
dies.
I feel like maybe we come across as like nerdy weirdos, which we are nerdy weirdos.
How
but the
dare
but the
you
reality
talk
is
about
we're
yourself, man.
But we're good looking nerdy weirdos. Maybe people assume that we are dweeby, and being dweeby is totally great. But maybe they just have an assumption when they hear us that, like, these people can't possibly
have faces.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That was the only reason I brought that up, not for compliments.
I'm going to be aggressively real with you guys right now, okay? And don't be like, Anna, no! Because, you know, I hate when people do that to try and make me stop talking poorly about myself. But I'm going to be very real with you. I have never, from as young as I remember, I've always been a little overweight. I've always been, like, a chunkier girl, okay?
Okay.
And I've always been different looking. So, sure, I mean, I might be, like, classically beautiful because I have like almond eyes and beautiful eyebrows. Look, I know what I have, okay? I know what parts of my face that I consider attractive. But in the overall scheme of things, and I'm being really real with you guys, don't freak out. I don't want a bunch of tweets being like, but no, you're beautiful. You shouldn't think that way. I know I shouldn't think that way. I know what the world expects of me. But to be completely real, I have never in my life considered myself attractive. I am just a person. I see your face. I know you want to, but don't do it. I'm being real. I'm an average, weird looking person. And I do understand my exoticisms make me beautiful.
No,
Shereen, let me finish.
I'm going to have a whole
thing.
But
my whole life, I have never considered myself beautiful because that's just who I am. I'm not someone who's lived that life where I'm like,
listen,
so gorgeous.
But it's not that it's who you are. It's what this standard of beauty is. It's the fault of society for making us believe that to be considered beautiful, you have to look a certain way, have a certain kind of face or cheekbones or nose or skin tone or whatever, or weight or whatever like that. It's society's fault for you not feeling that way. But the reality
definitely.
Is you are that way. You
that,
are
no,
that
agree.
Way, but it's just your feeling because of society.
I agree. It's just the way things are. Like,
yeah.
I'm not a classically defined beautiful person.
No, none of us are. We're not, like, fucking models.
Have you seen The Bachelor? I based all
Look at
my
Bella
life
Hadid.
Choices.
Look at Bella Hadid. She would not have been a model without plastic surgery. 100%.
What would she have done?
So much work.
But she's, like, a very... But in my mind,
sure,
like, classically
tall.
Beautiful in that sense is, like... Because I mean
she used money to get society's desirable features,
which
were high cheekbones,
Bella?
The younger one, high cheekbones, a tiny little nose, like wider eyes.
Oh yeah, no, that one definitely has had work done.
Yeah, yeah.
Gigi hasn't.
No, Gigi hasn't. I mean, maybe a little bit, but not as much.
Oh, yeah,
as Bella.
I've seen.
But
my point is,
she bought her standardized beauty features.
But even so, before that, she was still, I would still consider her beautiful, right?
Yeah, but she would never be a model.
You don't think
so? She wouldn't make it. She would not with her nose.
Really?
No, not for a second. People are comparing her to like Carla Bruni now and stuff like that. But like before she got surgery, no one knew who she was. My point in bringing that up is only because people, when they reach the standard of beauty that society is like, this is acceptable, we'll take you as a beautiful person now, that's when they become like beautiful, you know what I mean? Like,
true.
She no one said, Gigi, your younger sister is beautiful before she has plastic surgery. You know what I mean? Like, no one fucking knew who she was,
right?
So it's really the society has put these standards up that are so unachievable for anyone that doesn't have money or just is not just like genetically lucky. And the same goes for the majority of like popular young models or like celebrities now, whether it's the Jenners or the Kardashians or whatever, like all of they look the way they do because they are like striving for the standard that is so unachievable without money.
Yeah.
And that's just unfortunate because people will look at that not realizing that it's bought. And they think that there's something wrong with them being like, wait, I have wrinkles under my eyes. Why isn't she? Oh, I have like acne and I don't have that much that cheekbones or whatever. Like, I used to be really self-conscious about my face and I still kind of am because I have like no cheekbones. And like, I was told that like this perfect facial structure is like high cheekbones and everything. And like, I've gone over it since then because like I'm happy with my face. But there is this like thing, like you see the society idolizing a feature and you're like, I don't have that. I must be hideous. You know?
Right. Yeah. No. I get all of that, and that's all very real.
Sorry, I just fucking went off for a moment.
It's okay.
A lot of feelings.
It's just, you know, that's one. I have never ever in my life have ever. I don't even know because I don't hang around people who are very like into their looks and all that. Mm-hmm. But just never, I've never once in my mind has it ever passed just a thought that I would be ever considered extremely hot. So when someone tweets something like that at you, you're like, I don't know who you saw.
But
that's just the reality. Yeah. That's the world. That's my world. Like, I don't see myself as hot. I mean, sure, I'm beautiful because I'm me. But, like, I don't think like that. Like, I just don't know anything like that. I never grew up being considered beautiful, other than mm-hmm. my father being like, you're beautiful because... Yeah. I don't know, because he has to say that. He's legally
beauty, and this is very cliche, but beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and also society's standard of beauty is stupid. So
true.
Yeah. But you're, I mean, I hate to say it, and I know you're going to hate me for saying this, but you're beautiful, and...
I know I'm beautiful. I just, you know, I guess maybe the phrasing of extremely hot is just
that is
so,
a funny way to say it.
It's just that such an unreal thing to me, where I'm like,
because
yeah,
if someone told me that, I would totally. Be like, no. I mean, I feel like any girl that has, like, I don't know, what girl would be like, yeah, I agree with that. I don't know. Like,
you know what? You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Thank you for seeing me.
But
for
whoever tweeted that at me, I'm sorry, I don't have your name right in front of you. Thank you for tweeting at me. That's very nice. I'm glad you think I'm extremely hot.
It made me laugh because it was like a build up. It was like, you guys.
Yeah.
.. I just want you to know that Anna's extremely hot. It was like, I just like the format of that tweet.
What in the world? Truly, what in the world is that even mean?
I love it. And briefly, before we get into it, Lena Dunham continues to be a complete pile of shit.
She admitted
this morning that she lied about knowing that the accused rapist had, like, she...
Who raped who?
Remember when she defended her coworker?
Oh, right.
She came out this morning saying that she was lying when she was saying she had evidence to support her claim.
What was her claim? That she knew he didn't do it?
That she had sources that are, like, that made it, like, that she's, like, it's positive that he's innocent kind of thing.
Oh, like, she knew where he was at that time kind of crap?
But she admits to this morning that she had no actual sources, that she was lying.
Why? Why did she do that? Just to defend her friend?
Well, because she issued a statement to the woman that was the accuser, and, basically made it all about her. She was like, this has been a very big moment in my evolution. I will always think about you every day. I love you. I see you. I'm so sorry. But ultimately, due to the things that Lena Dunham said and Jenny Connor, the guy was never charged. Not, I mean, like, all for other things as well, but, like, it didn't fucking help the case when you're like, my coworker would never do this. This is the 3% of cases that are misreported. But now she's, like, issuing the statement to the fucking accuser, and it's like too little fucking too late. And so if you were on our Twitter at all today, I retweeted a bunch of fucking stuff because I was fucking livid when I saw this stuff. But it should be a career ender. Like, it shouldn't, why does she get so many passes? Like, she's, this brand of white feminism is so disgusting, it makes me sick. And it's just shifting power to white women. Also, like, if you read her apology, it's so blood boiling how she makes it about herself. Like, she's like, this has been a learning lesson for me. I'm sorry I had to, like, just, like, this, the pain of this woman of color has become, like, a stepping stone for her to, like, learn about herself. It just makes me fucking livid. But
why
does she... I just want to... She doesn't deserve that fucking movie, and she should give it up.
She's a weirdo.
Yeah.
I can't deal with how she, like, every other week, like, puts out something that's just unnecessary.
Yeah. Like, women of color are not here on this earth just suffer for the sake of her edufucation. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's all I wanted to say about that. I'm not going to talk about her for the rest of the episode, so I just wanted to get it out and to remind everyone that she's still trash. Yep. And go to our Twitter to see the stuff I retweeted about it. Ethnically amb. Sorry, I just really needed to get that out.
Oh, that's fine. I was just thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's really wild.
What are you going to talk about today?
Oh, real quick before, I want to mention a comedian friend of ours, Jason Sines, recently was in an accident. I honestly didn't know this happened until I was on Facebook today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of shocking because he's a very cool guy. He's comedian Jason Sines. I don't know if you follow his Twitter, Signs. He makes really funny signs and posts them all over LA. And they're all, like, really stupid and absurd. Yeah, he, I think, fell through a glass of, like, a skylight of an apartment building, and he's currently paralyzed from the waist down.
That's insane.
He's a very wonderfully nice person. I've always really liked him, and whenever I've worked with him, he's been really great. And this is very sad, because he's just a truly cool person. And a few weeks ago, I almost hit him with my car, which is really weird.
Whoa.
Because now he's paralyzed from the waist down. Well, look, I have nothing to do with
that. Did you have something
to do? No. I wasn't. I don't even know when this happened. But I just thought it was very interesting. I was like, oh, I almost hit him with my car the other day. Very fucked up. I'm not trying to make a joke out of it. It's very fucked up what happened to him. So, yeah, he, unfortunately, his health insurance didn't start till January 1st for his new job. So he was not covered. So it's going to be very expensive for him. So I am posting. I mean, there is no pressure. You obviously don't have to do shit with this. But posting his GoFundMe in our footnotes. If you want to donate a dollar or two, please feel free, because he's a very good guy. And he is a person of color. So if you want to support a person of color who has gone through something very horrible, whose comedy is very funny, and he's a very nice, wonderful person. Who once said I make very good gingerbread cookies, and so that's huge
why you're
for me.
Yeah,
I brought gingerbread cookies to his house once, and he was like, "These are delicious," and I was like, "You know what? You're in my heart forever." So
no, but it's really what a devastating thing to go through. Like one day you're walking, the next day you literally can't.
Yeah, and he's an amazing writer, and I mean, I'm just trying to think what you may have seen him in. I don't know. He's around. He's in a lot of stuff, but.
Yeah, if you have the ability to donate anything, consider donating to this really good cause. Mm-hmm. Help a fellow human in need.
Truly. You won't regret it.
No.
Yeah, so that's just all I want to touch on. I did not hit him with my car. I just want to emphasize that. I almost did, though. He was crossing the street. It was dark. What am I supposed to do? Not just slam on my gas? No, I'm just joking. Okay, so for my section, it's not going to be too long. I'm going to talk about me. Just joking. just me.
For the whole episode.
Me.
Whoa.
Halloween. Just joking. And then it turns into like, baby, it's cold outside. I don't even remember how that song goes. Okay, so I'm gonna. You want to do?
No, no, no. It's
fine. Oh, let's do it longer.
No. We're just gonna go. Next time.
No. Let's do it for 45 more minutes. Okay, so I'm gonna talk about the isolated village of Jinwar in Syria.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more.
I was waiting for your reaction because I said Syria.
Oh,
I thought you were gonna be like,
I started crying.
I love Syria. Just kidding. I only talk about Syria to see if Shireen will start crying.
That's really mean.
I don't really do that. I just found an interesting article that also happened to be about hamsters.
I'm glad you're talking about Syria today. This is a great topic.
I'm talking about the isolated village of only hamsters.
Oh yeah, they discovered that, didn't they? Yeah.
It's a stupid joke. Anyway,
throw back to last week if you guys haven't heard it.
If you haven't heard it last week, you turn this shit off.
And catch the fuck up.
And just go away.
To understand our hamster references.
You have not listened. You hop on a flight. You leave. I don't know where you are, but you leave
just,
where that
just
is.
Just to have time to listen to the podcast. Get on the plane.
Fly to
have
Syria.
No interrupted entry. Don't go to Syria. It's a bad place right now.
Even if you've listened to all episodes but missed last one, you need to go back and start from the beginning.
Yeah. Use that 16-hour flight to your advantage.
I'm on crack.
So tell us more about this village.
All right. So there's this village in Syria, which is it's basically a women-only commune.
Okay.
So that with the aid of women's rights groups and volunteers, a group of women in Syria, they've created a self-sustainable feminist commune outside of the Kurdish region of northeast Syria. So it's like a few miles from Qamishli.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to say that, which is a city that is mainly Kurds. So set up by local women groups and international volunteers to kind of have this area where these women are like free of the, in quotes, power structures of patriarchy and capitalism.
Word.
Mm-hmm. So the village of Jinwar, and the word Jinwar translates to women's space or women's land in Kurdish, is in the Democratic Federation of Northern Syria, also known as Rojava or Rojava, which became kind of like an autonomous region. And if you don't know what that means, it's basically like autonomous region is like an area which is free from external authority. And it's like geographically distant from the country, and it's populated by a different minority, such as Kurds. So in 2012, it was basically formed while the Syrian civil war was happening. I mean, it's still happening, let's be real. So according to Kurdish news outlet ANF News, the village is primarily for women whose families suffered violence by ISIS, which massacred Yazidi. Did I say that right? Massacred Yazidi men and raped and tortured thousands of women. And still thousands more women were kidnapped by the ISIS group and used as sex slaves.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering what's going on. So this, in response to all this, many Kurdish women, they themselves took guns and arms basically to fight ISIS.
Badass.
Yeah. And so like these women like basically trying to fight off ISIS is kind of what the news around the world captured the most, like, oh, these women, they're out here like fighting because their men were murdered, yeah, their husbands. But like,
dude, that's, let's make a movie about that.
Yeah,
we'll go do documentary about that, but I can't because I'm scared.
On that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I'll continue telling you about the village of Jinwar. We are back. So I'm talking about the village of Jinwar, and that's spelled J-I-N-W-A-R. So it actually opened on International Day Against Violence Against Women, which was November 25th, I guess, of earlier, a few years ago, with 30 homes, a school, a museum, and a medical center.
Wow.
So the founders of Jinwar, they see it as like a continuation of the women's revolution that led those women who left their house to go fight ISIS. But while like the world may know basically people know of Kurds because they're like constantly fighting on the front line and stuff, which is interesting because Kurdish society is very deeply conservative. So the fact that Jinwar was built as a place for women to escape the like normal roles they have in families that like patriarchal society has placed on them is actually kind of fascinating.
Yeah,
because in most places, like women in like Middle Eastern minority groups like that would never have an opportunity like this. Like, it's not a thing. You don't leave and go join a woman's commune to get away from everything so you can be self-sufficient because your husband was murdered by a terrorist organization. Yeah. That's like unheard of.
It's really unheard of over there. Like, maybe like, it's like in American 1970s, like hippie movement. Yeah. Like there's a commune, but like hippie movement did not reach the Middle East.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's no Waco out here.
Yeah.
So, which is not even remotely close to what this is. So Zainab Gavari, who's a 28-year-old resident, she says, without women, there is no freedom. Which is a mantra that is written on the walls. She says, until women educate and empower themselves, there won't be freedom. So as you can tell from that, their message there is like very deeply political.
Of course.
So in addition to arguing for a greater role of women in society, the village also promotes ecological and communal living as an alternative to modern life. So just life there is also very simple. Like, it's just a refuge for women who need support, particularly those who've lost loved ones in war. It's not like,
that's fucking beautiful.
Hey, you have to follow our politics. It's like, no, it's like, do you need somewhere to go because your life has been completely uprooted in this like fucking psycho world that we live in, the civilization that we live in. So Amira Muhammad, she told the Independent, because Independent is the one that did the profile on them. They said, I came here because I have 5 kids and didn't have an income or a house to live in, because her husband was killed by ISIS. And then she like moved back in. After that happened, she moved back in with her parents and she became entirely dependent on them. So she says, here they provide a lot of benefits like education for the kids, their living expenses. It is a nice village. Most importantly, my kids like it. We do our own farming. We plant trees. Every woman farms her own lot for her kids. We sell the harvest and use the revenue to support our expenses. And then Zainab Ghavari, who I was talking about earlier, says, this place is just for women who want to stand on our feet. There's no need for men here. Our lives are good.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, for real. And I kind of want to give a visual description of what it looks like there. So when you first enter, there's like these gates and there's like a kind of handmade wiring that says Jinvar. And so when you enter, there's a young woman with a rifle over her shoulders who guards the entrance to the village. And then apparently there's 30 brick houses that lie beyond the gate, and they're decorated with like paint that are like purple and blue. And then they surround a large plot of like agricultural land, which is where all the farming happens and where all the vegetables are growing. And the homes are all built by the women who are now living in them. So murals and statues of the women at work are scattered around the site. And in the center of the village is a garden meadow of flowers. Which is actually, like, it's a huge contract to, like, the villages surrounding it, which are, like, you know, disheveled and have fallen apart because of the, what is the civil war that has destroyed Syria. And also that it was built in northern Syria is no coincidence. Just a few years ago, the entire area, they was completely under the shadow of ISIS, and the jihadist group captured basically the whole area, and took over the entire Kurdish region and across the border to Iraq. And, you know, they were in Raqqa, which is just a few hours by car. And that's basically where they carried out one of the most heinous atrocities, which was in the town of Sinjar, which was less than 100 miles east. So that whole area was aggressively ISIS controlled. So these women, after they basically went to fight because their husbands were murdered,
they, like, reclaimed that territory for themselves.
Yeah, they were able to, reclaim it for what it was and rebuild, which is huge.
And make it beautiful.
Yeah.
Making fucking beauty out of destruction.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. So the residents of Jinvar, they basically are required to be safe, self-sustainable. The group takes turns cooking, and they eat all their meals together in a large communal kitchen. And there are animals to tend to and a school for the children. And apparently the village normally regularly receives visitors from the local area who just kind of want to learn their, like, ideas and what they do and, like, how they sustain.
Because you did mention they have a museum. So, like, they probably, like, are very dedicated to preserving that history.
Yeah, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, I love that.
Because I feel like things like that kind of slip through the cracks. Yeah. Besides the widows, there's also divorcees, which I think is funny, like, who have just chosen to not live with men.
It's like, I'm just done.
Yeah. So 17-year-old Nesreen Kadir, she came with her sister. And this is the last thing, because she's, like, 17 years old. She's like, yeah, you know, there's downsides to living an isolated life. Like, our life alone is sometimes boring, but it's a life of self-reliance. It is the life of free women. Which,
that's beautiful.
Yeah. It's very real.
Dude, that is... I'm so glad you talked about that today. That's so... Everyone needs to know about it.
It's kind of... Yeah, and I'll post, you know, the full profile on our footnotes so you can see. But, like... You don't need men, dude. No. You don't fucking need men. You can just do whatever you want.
It's
and
so
live.
Inspiring that they... Yeah. They literally grew a garden where, like, rubble was. You know what I mean? I love that.
And, like, an area that was completely, like, savage.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, inspired.
So that's me.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I like that a lot.
You'd like it.
Thank you. I'm appreciative. I'm going to get musical with y'all. Well, not really. But I did see Bohemian Rhapsody earlier this week, and I want to talk a little bit about it and the person that it's based on, essentially.
About?
Based on. A boot. So... It was released in last month in November 2018, and it's a biographical film about Freddie Mercury and his band that he was the frontman of, Queen. And it's the highest grossing musical biographical film of all time.
Really?
Yep. It's made a lot of fucking money.
I guess I don't really know what else.
However, a lot of the history is not necessarily accurate, but the filmmakers defend this decision because they had a finite amount of time to capture so much of his life. And I understand that because ultimately it's a movie and some things have to be more dramatic or happen in different times in his life just to make sense as far as like a plot goes. And despite the historical inaccuracies, it's a pretty fun fucking movie. And I'm a huge fan of Freddie Mercury and Queen's music, and it's really just like a fun time to celebrate the music of this beautiful human. So, however, it was a long road for this movie to even be made because the idea of doing a biopic about Freddie Mercury and Queen had apparently been suggested to the surviving band members before, but they had previously rejected the idea time and time again because they thought it would be so difficult to turn Mercury's story into the right sort of movie. However, they eventually realized that if they didn't do it, someone else would. And so Queen member Brian May said, "We were a little reluctant in the beginning because it's difficult to do a film that would do Freddie justice and what happened over the years. Because it was suggested to us a lot, we realized if we didn't get involved, somebody else would do it, and then we wouldn't be able to protect Freddie's kind of legacy. So we got involved. It's a long journey, over 10 years in the making since we've been talking to people and getting things ready." And so the members of Queen apparently felt like if it was going to happen, they were in the best position to make sure the story was right. So after a decade of pre-production and like actors going in and out of playing Mercury, it's finally a movie that's out to be seen. And actually, Sacha Baron Cohen was first poised to star as Freddie Mercury, but nothing was shot. And Mr. Cohen, later claimed that he dropped out after the band sought to, quote, sugarcoat Mr. Mercury's hedonism. And this prompted the Queen's lead guitarist, Brian May, to call him an arse. And then the word came out that Ben Whishaw was on board, but that didn't last either. And so the prospect of portraying Mercury seemed really interesting to Rami Malek, but it also made him feel he had some issues about it because he said he believed there was something utterly naive about those who thought they could depict a real human on screen, like a real person that existed in history. He said, "Why would you want to alter anyone's perception of their hero?" And I agree with that because there is part of me as like someone that watches and makes films that like it's so silly to try to emulate someone as a person. But that's what movies do. They're like a magical place where anything can happen. So I really appreciate that. But then the reason that Malek decided he would tell Mercury's story, is because that there were parts of his story that aren't widely known, like his shyness, his struggle to find identity, his really aching loneliness. Because he wanted younger people to be aware of the man, the band, and the person that was behind these iconic songs like We Will Rock You or Bohemian Rhapsody or The Killer Queen, and the list goes on. So, but this biopic carried enormous risks because bad biopics have an infamous place in history. Like, they've been parodied a lot and Rami Malek said that it could be detrimental to his career. But he knew he had to just take the risk and give it his all. And to do that, he got himself new teeth for the movie. Just for the movie, he had prosthetic teeth because Freddie Mercury had two more sets of incisors that made his teeth, or two, no, four. All because his upper back teeth, he had four extra upper back teeth that pushed his front teeth to an extreme overbite. But he believed this gave his voice more resonance. So,
weird.
I know. So Mercury, when he was in boarding school, his classmates named him Bucky.
Okay.
To embrace Mercury's physicality, Rami Malek had a costume designer create a set of these teeth that he carried around in a little black plastic container, and then he popped them into his mouth every night. And then he had a dialect tutor and a movement coach to study how he walked. He was doing a lot of research. He committed himself to this role entirely. And it really shows in the movie. And he did this all before the film was even greenlighted. He wanted to be prepared if it was a go. And obviously it was a wise move because the scene they actually shot was a reenactment of arguably like the best performance that Queen had, which was their Live Aid performance in 1985. That was the first scene they shot, which takes place later in the movie. And it's considered one of the best rock performances of all history. Malick's voice is mixed with Mercury's, and it's kind of like dubbed throughout the whole movie, which I think is better because trying to copy Freddie Mercury's voice is just like futile. But he also said that no one wants to hear him sing. So
why?
Because he's just because Rami Malek doesn't have a good voice apparently. So after the surviving band members saw Rami Malek perform this concert, a reenactment of this concert, apparently they were like 100% sold on Rami Malek portraying Mercury. He astonished the bandmates, and they felt the actor was not merely portraying Mercury but inhabiting him. And they said, "We sometimes forgot he was Rami," which is what May said in an email, which is truly amazing. That's how I know it's a good movie, if the surviving band members really thought that this actor embodied this leader they had. And yeah, he gave a great performance. And if you're a fan of the music or the human of Freddie Mercury, or even Rami Malek, I would just give it a watch. It's not a perfect movie. It's kind of like cheesy at times, but it's a fun movie. Malek said he's never devoted himself as intensely to anything as this role, and he said he just found it very, very, very important to him. And I think it's especially important that he had this role being a person of color, because Freddie Mercury was a person of color. So Rami Malek was born in LA to Egyptian immigrant parents. However, he didn't initially see himself as Mercury because he doesn't sing, as I said. But they're also both descendant from ancient cultures that people don't really know about. Mercury's family are Parsis, which are followers of the 6th century BC Persian prophet Zoroaster, who migrated to Zanzibar in the Indian Ocean before settling in England. His families did that. They were Zoroastrian. And we talked a little bit about Zoroastrian before, but it's a religion, an ancient religion that I'll get into in a minute. But Freddie Mercury was actually born Farouk Balsara. And he was regarded as one of the greatest singers of history, known for his 4-octave vocal range. And just to put this in perspective, Mariah Carey says she has 5. Farouk Balsara, he started going by the name of Freddie when he was at St. Peter's, a boarding school for young boys in Mumbai. He legally changed his name to Freddie Mercury around 1970 when Queen was formed, and he chose Mercury as his last name because he was the Roman deity who was the messenger of the gods. So he was born in Zanzibar in Stone Town. It's now Tanzania. And his family moved there so that his dad could continue his work as a British colonial in the British Colonial Office. So he grew up between Zanzibar and India before moving to Middlesex, England when he was a teenager. So he was of Parsi descent in Zanzibar, and he grew up there, as I said. He formed Queen with guitarist Brian May and Roger Taylor. And it's kind of interesting because all the members of the band had pursued other interests before joining the band. They all held degrees in different fields of study. Brian May had a PhD in physics and astronomy. John Deacon had a doctorate in electronics. Roger Taylor trained as a dentist. And Freddie Mercury received a degree in graphic arts. But how they all came together and formed this really iconic band, which is pretty interesting. So as I said, him and his family practiced Zoroastrianism. And it's one of the world's oldest monotheistic religions. Some people say it is the oldest. And although he hadn't practiced in years, his funeral was actually performed by a Zoroastrian priest.
Yeah.
It's a pre-Islamic religion of Iran that survives in isolated areas and most prosperously in India, where the descendants of Zoroastrian immigrants are known as Parsis. It's still one of the oldest remaining religions, and it remains active. And we talked about this in other episodes, but just to like a brief sentence summary, it's centered around the dualistic cosmology of good and evil, and predicting the ultimate destruction of evil. And I'm going to get more into Freddie Mercury after a quick commercial break. So as I said, he was born with 4 more back teeth. So he was teased a lot as a kid. He was also called a Paki a lot, which is it's like a derogative term for Pakistani. And it's a reference to that in the movie as well. But he basically just looked different, because when he eventually moved to England, he was someone that looked different. And not only that, he had these big teeth. And so he was teased a lot. But he spent most of his childhood in India taking piano lessons at the age of 7. And then he was sent to a boarding school when he was 8. And then by the age of 12, he had been forming a band in his school who covered rock and roll artists. And one of his former bandmates at this time said that the only music he listened to and played was Western pop music. And he had an uncanny ability to listen to the radio and replay what he had heard on the piano. So he had a very attuned ear to music. At the age of 17, they fled Zanzibar for the safety for their safety after the 1964 Zanzibar Revolution, in which thousands of Arabs and Indians were killed. And so they moved to a small house in England, and he enrolled in a college where he studied art, and he ultimately earned a degree in art and graphic design. And he later used his skills to create the logo for Queen, which is this like heraldic arms. For like, it's like a logo that has like, it looks like an army logo. And so he joined a series of bands, and he actually sold secondhand clothes for a while, and he had a job as a baggage handler, which is where the movie starts. But he was always remembered when he was growing up as a quiet and shy young man with a great interest in music. And so initially, when he formed Queen, there was kickback from the title of that of the band, the word Queen, because of the because it was a strong name, but it obviously had like certain like flamboyant gay connotations. But he said they chose it because it was royal and it was universal and strong. And at the same time, he changed his surname Bulsara to Mercury, and the logo, as I mentioned earlier, is this like a crest. And it's actually combines the zodiac signs of all four of the members, 2 lions for Deacon and Taylor, who are Leos, a crab for May, who's Cancer, and 2 fairies for Mercury, who's a Virgo. And there's a queue and a crown representing the band name Queen. As I said, he had a record range of almost 4 octaves. And when he spoke, he was more of a baritone, but the majority of his singing fell under the tenor range. And in 2016, a team of scientists decided to study Mercury's voice, and among the many facts they concluded was that his vocal cords moved faster than the average person's. So it's kind of crazy.
That's really weird.
I know. He was a prodigy.
What does that even mean?
I think he was just meant to sing. Oh. Maybe it wasn't due to his teeth. He thought it was because he had 4 extra teeth, that there was more space in his mouth. So maybe that's true. Who knows? But he was also reportedly very shy. He was known for his wild and outgoing antics on stage, but most people who knew him personally said he was very shy in his personal life, and one of the reasons he rarely granted interviews. Roger Taylor once said that in real life, nobody knew Freddie. He was shy, gentle, and kind. He was never the one he was on stage. He revealed he had AIDS just one day before he died. Mercury and his manager issued a statement confirming that he had AIDS the very day before he died. It had been widely speculated for a couple of years because of his very gaunt appearance and Queen's sudden lack of touring. He looks completely different in the last years of his life. You can look at pictures. It's really devastating. And some people were very upset by this delayed statement, saying that an earlier announcement would have raised a vast amount of money for the cause. His statement also said that, quote, as questions were asked about his health, the statement was from him and his manager. So it says, as questions were asked about his health, he adopted a more sedate lifestyle, which he insisted was the more real Freddie Mercury. He said, I'm so powerful on stage that I seem to have created a monster. When I'm performing, I'm an extrovert, yet inside, I'm a completely different man. His statement said, following enormous conjecture on the press, I wish to confirm that I have been tested HIV positive and have AIDS. I felt it correct to keep this information private in order to protect the privacy of those around me. However, the time has come now for my friends and fans around the world to know the truth, and I hope everyone will join me and my doctors and all of these worldwide to fight against this terrible disease. And then the next morning, he was gone, which is really sad. And even though people regarded him as gay, he was actually bisexual because he had a long-term relationship with Mary Austin before he officially came out. Mary Austin was convinced he was just gay and not bisexual, but Mercury would say in private that he was bisexual. So sexuality was a thing of conjecture for a lot of his life because he never outright said it. And I think people were kind of annoyed by that because they wanted him to have like a hard stance on it, but he was very private as a person.
How do you think the film portrayed that? Because there's been some reviews on it.
They portrayed it as well as they could, I think. They kind of made it seem like him being gay was like the root of all his downfall, which I didn't understand.
Because of the AIDS?
Yeah. And they just like...
It's dark.
Because like the main... Because he had very... as far as the film portrayed it, he had a very abusive relationship with someone that worked with him. Like emotionally abusive and manipulative. And so... And he was like a very he showed him the gay scene and like was very like flamboyantly gay and like showed him a different part of life. And that made him seem like... that life was a bad influence on him, which I know it wasn't the case because they introduced John Hutton in the movie, which was his partner for the rest of his life, for like the last 5 years of his life. But it's not the best portrayal of the gay community, honestly. And I don't know if that was their intention, but that's just how it read to me. But he had a very long a friendship and relationship with this woman, Mary Austin, who he met through his guitarists. And but during their relationship, he began having affairs with males. And when he eventually told Austin of his sexuality in 1976, it ended their romantic relationship. But they remained close friends throughout the years. And he often referred to her as his only true friend. In a 1985 interview, Mercury said of Austin, "All of my lovers ask me why they can't replace her, and it's simply impossible. The only friend I've got is Mary. I don't want anyone else. To me, she is my common law wife. To me, it was a marriage. We believe in each other, and that's enough for me." And he wrote several songs about her, including which is Love of My Life. So he had deep feelings for her, but ultimately was more sexually involved with men. Hutton said the last partner he had, he said that Mercury died wearing the wedding band that he gave him. But after he died in his will, Mercury left his London home to Austin, Mary Austin, rather than Hutton, saying to her that you would have been my wife and it would have been yours anyway. So commentators claimed that his sexual orientation was hidden from the public, but others claimed he was openly gay. When he was asked directly about this in 1974, he was asked, "So how about being bent?" He replied, "You're a crafty cow. Let's put it this way. There were times when I was young and green, it's a thing schoolboys go through. I've had my share of schoolboy pranks. I'm not going to elaborate further." So I think he didn't like the way it was, he was just constantly being asked to label himself. I think as a private person, he didn't appreciate that. So I think he just never did it for that reason. But also, homosexual acts between adult males over the age of 21 had been decriminalized only in 1967, so 7 years earlier. So in the 1980s, he would often distance himself from his partner, John Hutton, during public events. So it wasn't okay to be gay all the time, even back then. But his flamboyant stage performances, they led journalists to always talk about his sexuality. However, he didn't ally himself with any political outness or to LGBT causes. So I think that also angered the gay community because his platform would have been helpful to them. The last thing I want to say about him, there's so many things to say, and all my references will be in our footnotes, but he was a devoted cat lover. He loved cats, and he had as many as 10 at one point. He even had an album and a song dedicated to his cats called Mr. Bad Guy. And he wrote a song about his favorite cat, Delilah.
Why Mr. Bad Guy?
I don't know. But this song about his cat, Delilah, goes something like, "Delilah, Delilah, you're irresistible. You make me smile when I'm about to cry. You bring me hope. You make me laugh. You get away with murder, so innocent. But when you throw a mood, you're all claws and bite. That's all right. Delilah, Delilah, you make me so very happy when you cuddle up and go to sleep beside me. Then you make me mad when you pee all over my suite." So I just thought that was really cute. his trademark was also like this bottomless mic, which is it explains in the movie too. But apparently early in Queen's career, Mercury was mid-show when the mic stand snapped in half. And instead of having it replaced, he just used it as is. And so he uses throughout the majority of Queen's touring. So just like it was the mic and like half a stand. So he just like kind of carried it around.
He had a broken mic stand.
Yeah, that was like his trademark it became. But yeah, he was a really incredible person. And I urge you all, if you're a fan, to watch the documentary or the film. It's not a documentary, it's a film. But if the surviving members of Queen were involved in it and if they approved of that performance, but despite it being inaccurate, I think it's worth a watch. And it just celebrates that music. And it's so important to support people of color. Rami Malek did a fantastic job. Yeah, Freddie Mercury is such an amazing person, and I don't think a lot of people know about his background. Like, they know about Queen, and they know about whatever, but unless you're, like a you seek it out, that information is, like, unknown to you. Like, a lot of people don't know he was Zoroastrian. Mm-hmm. So,
I feel like I only learned that, like, a few years ago.
I know. It's, like, an unknown little fact. And so I hope this was informative. Yeah.
I was just
that was my
at
piece.
Photos of his broken, mic.
It's like this. It's they use it in the movie too. I think the movie's worth a watch. Like, there are some parts where like the film person in me is like, this is stupid, but I just have to like let that go and have a good time, and then it's a good time. But yeah, Freddie Mercury is amazing.
Yeah, he was truly.
Yeah,
I mean, probably one of the greater performers of our time.
100%. And they also had his parents in the movie, which are like these like conservative brown parents with accents, so there is like some crossover with like, oh, they don't understand why he wants to pursue something creative. So it's like it's kind of disheartening because it does seem like he rejected that part of himself along with his name change and like never talking about it, but I think that was just his way of coping,
right? Because they probably were not accepting of
not at all, especially him being involved with men and stuff. So,
but I feel like we all kind of did that too when we were young, you know?
Yeah.
Trying to deal with our emotions and figure out where,
like,
who
living
we came
a double
from.
Life or like trying to not tell our parents what we're actually doing or whatever. But I think I'm glad that the movie included that, because they could have very well did away with his parents or his background or so I'm glad they included it. Mercury, Freddie, Farouk Balsara.
Farouk. Freddie is such an English version of Farouk.
Well, it's like how like everyone that has an Arab name is Sam. You know?
I remember all my family people whose names were Farid would go by Fred.
Nice.
Yeah. I feel like we should keep this one short because we have a bunch of stuff to do after this.
Yeah,
we're on a tight schedule.
What should we? Yeah, it's a short and sweet one.
Yeah, guys, sorry this one can't be longer, but boy, oh boy, we have to guest in another show after this, and then there's another show recording after this, so we got to keep it so tight. Sorry, guys,
tight,
it's one
tight,
of those
tight.
Days.
Like, nope, no, I'm not gonna say that.
Yeah, sorry.
Sophie's giving me a look.
Some burps in.
Sophie is giving me a look. But yeah, we're gonna keep doing these. Wednesday episodes. We're gonna have two episodes a week for a little bit at least, until as far as we can keep it up.
Yes. I don't know what do you want to drop. I don't know what you're dropping. I don't know what's
next
going
week
on.
I'm pretty sure you'll be hearing from Caitlin Stassi.
There you go. Caitlin Stassi.
I hope I'm saying her name right. Stacy Stassi. I always say Stassi because it looks like Stassi to me, but I've never actually looked it up. But she is someone that has inspired me immensely, and she's a fucking badass. She founded the site herself.com, where it was a couple years ago, kind of like the first website to like have photos of naked women that were like non-pornographic and like by the actual woman herself. And she's also like an actress and an activist and just someone that I've looked up to for a long time. So the fact that I'm going to get to meet her tomorrow and talk to her, we're recording this on Thursday and I'm going to meet her on Friday. But yeah, she'll be on next week. So if you're listening to this on Monday, it'll come out on Wednesday. Be sure to listen to that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, leave us a nice little review and rating on iTunes or on Facebook if you don't have iTunes. 5 stars, no less. Thank you very much.
Yes, follow us on Twitter at ethnicallyambamb. Follow us on Instagram at ethnicallyambamb. Big AMBIG. I always have to look at you while I do this, because if you're nodding your head, I know I'm doing it right. Get us on our website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com. You can look at our footnotes where there's more information about what we were just talking about.
Go to TeePublic.
TeePublic. Buy our merch.
Merch.
Also, support Jason Signs if you can. Yeah.
Link will be in the footnotes and in the description.
If you can, do what you can. Stay tuned for more bonus episodes.
I really appreciate the response to them. I think it makes me happy.
Also, should we ask the audience, do you guys think Shireen had this idea that where we interview each other?
Oh yeah, because we were thinking for the Christmas break, since like the office will be closed for a week
and we don't want to do any work,
we might just like stockpile two episodes in a row and like just record in a row. What do you guys think of one episode where Anna interviews me and the other episode where I interview Anna, then we drop those like a week apart for our episodes? Does that make sense? I don't know. It's an idea I had.
Let
us know what you think. And if you have another idea of what
things
we should
do, record early or whatever.
I do know that some of you reached out already asking for us to call our parents again, and we are planning to do that pretty soon. But
yeah, we'll do
just
it.
give us a minute. Yeah.
Guys are so busy.
We're busy. Anna's very busy. I'm busy too, but I feel like Anna's more busy all the time. But yeah, Anna, where can they find you?
Oh, yawning. Find me at Anna Hosnia on Twitter.
And I'm on Twitter at, I changed my Twitter handle recently, Shirohero666. And on Instagram, I'm Shirohero, Hero, and like the devil, 666. Until next time.
Treating you back.